Now on Sunday Extra, we're joined by one of the leading global advocates for the recognition of a condition that's estimated to affect 25 million people around the world. The most commonly diagnosed type of diabetes is type 2, which is strongly associated with rising obesity levels. But Professor Meredith Hawkins is the chair of the International Diabetes Federation Working Group on type 5 diabetes, that's been described as a neglected form of diabetes among lean and undernourished individuals. Meredith's also professor of endocrinology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York, and I'm very pleased to say she joins us now. Welcome, Professor Hawkins.
Thank you. Delighted to join you this morning.
Meredith, you were one of 39 signatories to what's described in the Lancet Global Health Journal as an international consensus statement on classifying a new distinct form of diabetes. So what is type 5 diabetes?
Thank you for asking. So this is a form that is, in our opinion, completely distinct for a number of reasons from the other types. And as you noted correctly, type 2 is so much more common. And so right off the bat, what makes the two of those conditions so different is that people with type 5 diabetes are remarkably thin. These are people who've been undernourished their whole lives. In fact, even in utero, they've never had a chance to catch up. These would be people often living in rural areas in low and middle income countries, living on about $2 Australian a day. So impoverished, lean, undernourished, very low fat mass. And what makes them distinct from type 1 diabetes, they also can be lean, but these individuals are different because they make small amounts of insulin, unlike type 1 where there's no insulin. So they don't have to have insulin to survive. They don't go into what we call ketoacidosis, which is what is so serious in people with type 1 diabetes. So it's a very intriguing condition because it seems to be definitely caused by that long-term undernutrition, perhaps with a genetic predisposition in certain individuals, and then leads to a very devastating form of diabetes, often caught late because these people don't often have access to healthcare. So when they come in, they have very high glucose levels, difficult to control. They're very likely to get severe complications of diabetes. So for all these reasons, and for the fact, as you pointed out, this probably affects up to 25 million people in the world, we believe that it deserves much more study.
And as you said, the incidence of type 5 diabetes is strongly focused in lower and middle income countries. I wonder if you could speak a little bit about your personal experience of treating sufferers with type 5 diabetes in Uganda.
Thank you. Yeah, so that was about 20 years ago, and I was on a diabetes ward. Noticed that there were a few individuals that were thin, that were being treated as though they had type 1 because everything was using textbooks written in high-income countries. And so therefore, it was either type 1 or it was type 2. So because they were young and thin, they were being treated with quite a bit of insulin. And sadly, a number of these individuals, when they were sent back to their villages, died of low blood sugar. So the food supply that they had was insufficient. But I also noticed that they seemed more sensitive to insulin than we were expecting. And it triggered a memory, as sometimes happens. I had an iconic mentor when I was a resident, Dr. Herbert Hopingkong in Toronto, who had originally been from Jamaica and used to talk about Jamaica-type diabetes. All of a sudden, something was triggered in my mind, this link to malnutrition. So I started looking up that condition, and this whole story came out about the first discovery in Jamaica 70 years ago of a type of diabetes that seemed completely distinct from type 1 and type 2. And it didn't keep that name for long because soon after it was published in The Lancet, it was noted that this condition appeared to be present in many other countries. So reports started popping up in Indonesia and India, in Brazil. There were many other countries where these reports started to appear. It gained more and more attention to the point that the World Health Organization named it malnutrition-related diabetes in 1985. And that really helped to put a bit more of a spotlight on this condition. And it was ultimately noted that it was present in many countries all around the tropical areas of the world. But unfortunately, in 1999, because there just wasn't enough evidence, enough research for this link between undernutrition and diabetes, the World Health Organization wanted to be cautious. They removed that name, citing the need for more research. But the problem was, once that name got removed, it was very problematic, because that was quite simply why, when I walked into the medical ward in Uganda and saw these patients, this condition at that point was not recognized. Mm. And that's the reason why everyone was treating it as though it were type 1. And so that led me to a wonderful medical school in India, Christian Medical College in South India. And it was there that we were capable of doing very involved research studies to delve into what made these individuals distinct. Were they in fact distinct when we compared them with type 1 and type 2? And in fact, because we were able to do such in-depth studies of their responsiveness to insulin, their ability to secrete insulin, even the amount of fat they had in their liver and their muscle and all sorts of other measures that are relevant to diabetes, we were able at the end of the day, in a paper that we published 3 years ago, to be able to say that they had characteristics that were completely unique. And this, thankfully, gained more and more recognition, leading the International Diabetes Federation to give it this name about a year ago.
Mm. So, obviously, there's a checkered history in terms of recognition of type 5 diabetes and various names, as you've also pointed out. In terms of the research that you and others have been able to do, how far advanced are we now in terms of having clear diagnostic criteria? And also, considering what you were saying about people being treated as if they're type 1 patients, how much is known about what the correct treatment for type 5 diabetes is?
Yes, good questions. One would be that we have 70 years worth of literature of reports of this condition in many parts of the world, and these reports are remarkably consistent. So we just published a consensus paper about 6 months ago in Lancet Global Health, as you mentioned, and in that paper, we summarized these reports, and in essence, the description of this condition is actually more specific than type 2 diabetes, right, which is a bit of a diagnosis of exclusion. So all of the features that I described to you earlier are so unique to type 5 diabetes that, in essence, it's quite simple to diagnose them, in essence, clinically. They are just so clinically distinct. The question is, how do we treat them? Because this has never been embarked upon in any type of randomized trial, as you'd have in high-income countries. Mm. So what we can do is look at all the medications that are currently available for types 1 and 2 diabetes, and we can delve into, as we're doing now, looking very carefully into literature, seeing, could these be safe for these individuals? Could they be effective? What we suspect is, because they do have a severe defect of insulin secretion, even though they still make some insulin, and therefore they probably need small amounts of insulin. Their bodies are tremendously sensitive to insulin. So again, to make sure that we wouldn't cause fatal hypoglycemia, we would likely need very small amounts, but that could be augmented by other treatments. Thankfully, there's a number of treatments for type 2 diabetes that don't cause low blood sugar, like metformin, for example, and others that don't cause weight loss, because that's something that we do not want to
induce. No, indeed, yes, yeah.
That's right.
Professor Meredith Hawkins, is malnutrition alone a sufficient factor to cause type 5 diabetes?
I believe not. So if we think that there's about a billion undernourished people in the world presently, which is a tragic figure, but if we're thinking that there's only 25 million that have type 5 diabetes, I believe personally that there's likely to be a genetic component to this. And that's something that we're now embarking on more careful studies to address. I would believe, if I had to tell you my hunch at the moment, I believe that these individuals likely have what we would call a beta cell susceptibility gene. What that means is that they inherit a gene that makes them prone to either poor development of beta cells or early failure of beta cells, those being, of course, the highly specialized cells that make insulin. So that would be my hunch, but it's going to be intriguing to see if this will be borne out.
Yes, indeed. Well, it's absolutely fascinating. And unfortunately, time is getting the better of us, so I don't have a chance to ask you about what's going on with the naming conventions of diabetes, because type 5 diabetes is the fifth classification alongside types 1, 2, and then 3C and gestational diabetes. Yes. But that is a discussion for another day. Dr. Meredith yes. Hawkins, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday
Extra.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
And Meredith Hawkins is chair of the International Diabetes Federation Working Group on Type 5 Diabetes, also the director of the Global Diabetes Institute and professor of endocrinology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.